Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Cricket Enthusiast Podcast. Lots to talk about, lots of cricket that has happened in the last 1 month or so. So much so that it's so difficult even to keep up with. Hi Mehul, how have you been balancing your personal work, professional work, and watching all this cricket?
Hi Kaushik, yeah, it has been indeed, you know, quite a busy week. I mean, work-wise and cricket-wise as well. And, you know, I have two screens set up in my study home office. And on one screen, I keep, you know, ESPN Cricket Info. And sometimes, you know, I just have a glance at it during my calls. And on the other one, obviously, I'm working when I'm working. Yeah, so that's the way I'm following.
Okay, so same. I mean, I follow ESPN Cricket Info fully to read through all the commentary, and then at the side I do my work. So let's focus mainly a little bit today on the recent India Australia series that concluded recently, and interesting series, I must say. It all went downhill for India after the second Test match. We ended up losing the third one on a rank turner in Indore. The less we talk about the Ahmedabad pitch, the better. And then in the one-day internationals, like, we were lucky to win the first one, and then we were not even close to good enough in the second and third. So did you get a chance to watch some bits of those matches?
Yeah, I did. So for the second one, I was in India. So, I mean, that I was absolutely, you know, glued in. The third one, you know, I was traveling back, so no, I didn't watch it. But then, you know, it was... Was there anything to watch? I doubt, you know, because it was a ridiculous test match. I mean, the wicket and the result, the way, you know, our team played or Indian team played, I mean, it was not very, you know, helpful. And what I feel is, you know, you cannot keep Australia down. I mean, they have some very good spinners as well. If you look at it objectively, you know, be it Agar or be it Kahneman or, you know, for that matter, Lyon, you know, they will come out on top sooner or later. And you can't, you know, just keep on serving them, you know, the same sort of surface, right? If you recall, Australia did a similar tactic against India last time when we were there. The wickets were quite lively. And what happened? I mean, we won the series. So, you know, it all evens out. I mean, you have to perhaps, you know, play it on balance as a home side. Don't give yourself too much of, you know, comfort in the fact that only you can bring that sort of skill, which will be helpful on that wicket, right?
Absolutely, but especially if you consider, and this has been a trend in India, like we tend to serve up some really spinning, really excess spinning tracks, and not realizing that maybe our own batsmen are not that good against playing spin nowadays, probably because they don't play enough domestic cricket. The difference between probably the generation in 2000s and 2010s, the current generation is probably that I remember Tendulkar, Ganguly and Dravid, whenever they got a chance, I mean, of course, they didn't have T20 cricket at the time, but whenever they got a chance, they would go back and play Ranji Trophy or any of Dhuri Trophy or sometimes even club cricket. And the pitches in Ranji and first-class cricket can be quite challenging. We have some amazing spinners over there, and probably that helped them keep in touch and also play well when the conditions became excessive. But it's not the same now. Like, if you look at our top order, I mean, except maybe Pujara and Shreyas Iyer, of course, he got injured. But except Pujara, probably there's no one else whom we can completely rely on to play good spin.
And you're right. You know, in the sense that if you look at the batting collapses we've had over the past 5-6 years, right? I mean, one of the reasons is definitely this. You know, we have sort of... we are missing that art of, and it's common across the teams. It's not India as such. I mean, look at the batting collapses around the world. I mean, this cricketing generation of, you know, they have sort of lost the talent of using their feet against the spinners.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, whenever these guys step out, I mean, they expect the ball to come, you know, at a comfortable sort of, you know, height to drive or, you know, play through their, you know, aerial shots. But, I mean, they don't want to go and reach out the ball. I mean, I was looking at, you know, one of the highlights from, you know, a very old match, Ganguly. And look at the way he used to step down to the spinners. I mean, he was so sure of where the ball will land. And, you know, he will not let the ball do its trick, right? And even in English conditions, and this was a World Cup 99 match, which I was, you know, sort of looking at. Sri Lanka against Sri Lanka, Taunton, if I remember correctly.
183.
Mm. Yeah, that was the match. So 370 or 380 odd India made that day.
Yes.
And look at the way he hit Muralidharan for sixes. It was a small ground. I give it that. But, you know, those 22 yards, those are the constant. And if you can cover that sort of a distance, you know, so easily, and Muralidharan was not a bad spinner. He was at his prime at that time. So that I haven't seen happening, you know, across world cricket of late. I mean, not sure what's your observation on that. But
yes, that's... absolutely. I understand that many of the teams from outside Asia are pretty poor at playing spin. But I think the same can be said for even teams like Pakistan and Sri Lanka. And and you're absolutely right. Like the overall quality of play, the use of feet, which is so important when you come to play, when you have to counter spin, even using your feet to defend the deliveries. That is, and you know, you could see that when the lower order Indian batsmen batted, the way Ashwin, even in Bangladesh, even the series before that, where the ball was turning square, even over there, the way Ashwin was using his feet to defend the ball, I think there's a clear correlation between playing domestic cricket and playing international cricket. And while we did not expect, say, countries like South Africa, England, the SENA countries, so-called SENA countries, to be good at playing spin, it is very disappointing to see Indians succumb. It's okay to lose. I mean, you will end up losing, but not... And my problem with the Indore pitch is this, that, okay, I was pretty pleased with the first two pitches, being partisan, the Nagpur pitch and the other, I forget where the second test, but Delhi pitch. Because even over there, at least we saw Akshar Patel, and it was not a lottery. If you could apply yourself, you could still play well. It was just good, and it was good enough for our spinners to run through the Australians, but it was not good enough for them to, for them, when they do not have the skill, to run through our batsmen. But in the third pitch, well, in the third test, what happened was it became a lottery. It was basically about if you land the ball, if the batsman is not able to play, you're going to get bundled out. And Australia were pretty. In their first innings, they were pretty fortunate. Many times their edges didn't carry, a lot of dropped catches. I don't think India bowled too poorly, but you're not going to win if you score 100 all out. And that's what happened in Pune as well in 2016. Happened even when we played Sri Lanka. So there's a trend over there. But if you don't learn from the trend and if you're overconfident, well, I guess the result is there for everyone to see.
Yeah, the other thing is, I mean, I'm a little worried about the World Test Championship final as well, because Bumrah is not there. We have a sort of a semi-fragile batting unit at the moment, who's not done very well over the last 12 months or so. If I, you know, look at the numbers, and Shami is going to be the workhorse, which, you know, for me is, you know, a little challenging. Maybe Umesh Yadav will come through. He has, you know, grown by leaps and bounds over the last, you know, couple of matches, and, you know, setting his personal, you know, grief aside, he has sort of emerged a very, you know, handy sort of a bowler, and he would be handy in the English conditions as well, especially towards you know, early summer. This is in May, June, if I remember correctly.
It's on June. It's, I think, starts on June 7th. I think 6th June or 7th. Yeah.
Yeah. So the conditions are going to be, you know, favoring these sort of you know, bowlers, but on the other side, you also have the Australian, you know, pace battery. So it's going to be an interesting you know, match to watch. But I do hope it carries for 4 days or more. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be difficult for India to win, to be honest.
Yeah, they have kept 6 days for the test match, right?
Yeah.
So that is going to be interesting. But for the World Test Championship final, I agree with you. But I think India will still go with three fast bowlers and two spinners, because I think oval is slightly flatter and the ICC will be preparing this pitch. So probably I expect this pitch to be a bit better. Maybe it will not... I hope it does not seem around too much. And of course, the conditions in London will, of course, overhead conditions will depend how much it swing. But I still get the feeling that India will probably go with three seamers, and that will be Shami, Siraj, and from what Rohit Sharma says, I think it will be Shardul Thakur. And I think Umesh will miss out. And then Jadeja, who can bat in the top seven, and maybe Ashwin, because I don't think Akshar is going to be. I think it's going to be a shootout between between Ashwin and Umesh Yadav. So depending on whether they go with 4+1 or 3+2, I think either Ashwin or Umesh Yadav will play. I think Thakur will play, because that's what Rohit said, that Thakur will play in England. So And he took a lot of wickets this time.
Yeah. He did, and he certainly gives you that comfort of, you know, some rear guard action as well, which you know, Umesh doesn't. But let's see, you know, I saw this post somewhere, maybe on Twitter, I don't remember where, but, you know, the interesting idea put by someone who said, you know, why don't you prepare, you know, a half and half wicket? So one half, let it be, you know, seeming wicket, the other, you know, a rank turner, and then see how, you know, batters fare, right? It's an interesting thought. I mean, and there's another comparison to that. I mean, Federer and Nadal did play a match. On one side, you had a grass court. On the other side, you had the, you know,
clay court.
So, yeah. I mean, sounds interesting. I mean,
Battle of Champions or something it was called. I don't remember what it was called. Yeah. Battle of Surfaces. Yeah, that was called. Yeah.
Yeah, but if cricket has come to that, then, you know, why doesn't ICC, you know, just do something different and, you know, try to bring such sort of excitement in the game, you know? It'll be...
I think the first thing that they need to do is take the final only out of England. Like, I think the first three finals are in England, and of course the none of the other boats also seem to be interested in hosting it, so that's a pity. But I hope that eventually it happens. Maybe they will come up with a solution where they have where they have different kind of pitches on both ends, so that batsmen get challenged, but it would be interesting to see. But one gripe I have about the World Test Championship final is regarding the Indian team is that, again, I don't think they're going to take it too seriously. I mean, yes, they do make the right noises that they want to win the championship, but I don't think not playing a single red ball game for what, 3 months before the final, and then just turning up against an Australian side and expecting that you will just turn up and win. I mean, that sounds pretty arrogant from the Indian team.
It does.
I mean, I understand that the IPL final is 10 days before, but, you know, this World Test Championship final, the date is announced maybe 2-3 years in advance. So maybe when the BCCI has a fair idea that India will probably be one of the teams which reaches the final more often than not, they can probably push back up, start the IPL a bit earlier in those years, or tell the franchises that they have to release those players maybe in the last 2 weeks and go to whichever the venue. You can, now it's England, and go there and maybe play some practice matches. But clearly, that's not going to be the case.
No, I agree. And if you look at, you know, the approach England and Australia take with Ashes, right? I mean, Ashes is also this summer. You have, you know, in England. Yeah. And some of the players have decided to sort of, you know, distribute their workload and, you know, get an early release from IPL or do not come at all. So, you know, I mean, clearly shows where the priorities lie and where, you know, players are interested in doing things. But I don't blame them as well. You know, I mean, they have been on the road for, let's say, you know, close to, what, 12 months now. And it's very interesting when you, you know, have a tournament which sort of, you know, gives you earnings in, let's say, a space of 40 days, what you would do in 5 years previously or even more. Right. So cannot blame them. But then at the same time, yes, you know, that's an approach to take as well. I mean, and maybe I'm hoping, you know, Pujara plays county cricket again.
Yeah, he's playing. He's playing for Sussex. So
there'll
be one player who will be prepared.
He gets a game before that, you know. Yeah.
I think he will, right? Because they are playing. He's playing for Sussex right from the start of April. So I think from the start of the county season, he'll be there for 2 months. So that should be, I think he'll get good game time, and he'll probably play when it's the toughest time in English, in the English conditions. So hopefully he'll be well prepared by the time the World Test Championship final comes about. And on a related note, like you spoke about Australia and England preparing for the Ashes. And on a similar analogy, I remember in the first World Test Championship final, all the New Zealand players left the IPL early, and they actually played a 2-test series in England before the final. And it clearly showed. It clearly showed when the final came about. They won that series. I think Devon Conway made a double century in that opening match, and it clearly showed when they played India that who was the more prepared side, right? So
another thing which, you know, is interesting is, you know, the ODI series which just concluded, right? I mean, I'm a little worried. You know, because the World Cup is in India, and if this is the state of play, and, you know, if this is the batting unit we hope to go with, I don't think it's a finished batting unit at this point in time. And Dravid and Rohit Sharma both have a problem at their hands. you know, because I know Shubman Gill is doing well. Surya Kumar Yadav, he, you know, had a bad patch. That's forgettable for him. He will come back, I'm sure, you know, very well. But with others, I mean, if they're not applying themselves and, you know, just trying to bat 50 overs, it's going to be a difficult one for India to, you know, even, let's say, qualify for the, you know, semifinals and so on.
The final ODI was quite a terrible piece of batting by the lower order, I felt. I mean, even the way Virat Kohli threw away his wicket, like when we needed only, what, 75, 80 runs to win when he got out and there were a lot of overs left. And that's not, I mean, the earlier Kohli would probably have just be, I would never have seen the earlier Kohli play such a shot at that point of time. He would have probably stayed till the end and he would have probably won. But and the way they just threw the wickets away, all from I think three down, there was no question of losing that match when Rohit Sharma, when KL Rahul and Virat Kohli were batting, and then for some reason they just threw their wickets away. And over there, I do have a question about Ravindra Jadeja's batting form. I mean, he has not been in the best of batting forms of late, even be it Test cricket or ODI cricket, which is a big worry because he's such an important cog in the wheel at number seven.
Yeah, definitely. And with, you know, Rishabh Pant probably will miss out on the action this World Cup. I mean, I think that number seven spot becomes, it's sort of open if Jadeja doesn't consolidate. He will get a nod ahead of Ashwin any day of the week. I mean, any surface. I mean, because of his fielding and, you know, the way he, you know, sort of manages his bowling quota. But his batting needs to, you know, come good, because at one point in time, you had someone like, let's say, Michael Bevan or Dhoni in that position. And that's the traditional position. That's the last of your, you know, recognized batters. That's, I mean, only when it's a crunch time, I mean, number seven has to deliver. Otherwise, you know, they don't even need to bat, right? So if Jadeja does not get his act together, it'll be a difficult, you know, sort of selection, at least in my, you know, opinion.
And the problem is even his replacement, like if his like-to-like replacement is Akshar Patel, that his bowling is nowhere as any close to as good as Jadeja's. I mean, his bowling is a big liability. I mean, I remember that in this first test series against England, he took a lot of wickets, but those wickets were in extreme. And we saw what happened in the Australian series. His bowling was completely nullified. And even in the one-day series that happened now, his bowling was not at all effective. And you can't just take him for his batting. Right, so that's a big problem. And even for Surya Kumar Yadav, I don't think he's a tested. I don't think he has proven himself in ODI cricket whatsoever. Like he's probably been taken because of his T20 form and T20 exploits, and also he's lucky that Shreyas Iyer is injured. I think if Shreyas Iyer is fit, I think he'll come
not
back.
Not entirely right. Fair. I mean, obviously Shreyas Iyer, you know, is more matured because he's had more exposure and everything. But look at the way Surya Kumar Yadav has evolved over the last, you know, couple of years as well, right? I mean, if Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, and, you know, sort of the old lot retire, I mean, he is a natural sort of, you know, he has a natural position in the team, right? And if you look at, he has batted against the best in T20s all over the world. I see no reason why he can't, you know, just elevate his game for, you know, a format which is only slightly longer. I mean, he just needs to perhaps, you know, bat lower down the order, like the way he did in the last game, but he didn't got any runs. But then, you know, maybe he could be a number six or seven, you know, staple if need be as well. But definitely, he should be picked in the side. He should be in the ODI side. The World Cup is happening in India. He has a very good read of the wickets and he'll have good exposure during the IPL as well. So I think it's not that, it's going to be difficult to ignore him.
I think he'll be there in the squad and I think it will probably go. I think it will probably go down to who's in better form at that time of during the run up to the World Cup. Shreyas or if Shreyas is fit, of course. The biggest problem for Shreyas is that he's very injury prone. So if Shreyas is fit and if Surya Kumar is fit, then I think only one of them has a place in the side. So I think it will probably come down to who's in better form the run up to the World Cup. And I was just checking India's schedule so till the World Cup now, and India's got what, 6 ODIs and then 5 ODIs in the Asia Cup. So that's a total of, assuming India don't make the final, so worst case scenario, so of the Asia Cup. So then India has 11 ODIs to basically prepare their balance and to fix their final In fact, not even 11, right? Because you cannot wait up till the last tournament before the World Cup to fix a 15. So you ideally would want your 15 or 16 players to be ready by the time they play their final series before the World Cup, which is a home ODI series against Australia, interesting enough again. So they have got three ODI series. And before that, I think it's the Asia Cup. And then they play, and before that, they play the West Indies in June. So yeah, so the, June, where they go to West Indies, play three ODIs. They have an entire series, tests, ODIs, everything. Then they play the Asia Cup sometime in August, and then they play at home against Australia. So I think if you roughly say 11 ODIs, it's okay. There's still some time, but yeah, like you said, there's a lot of gaps that has to be filled over there. I also feel that fielding is a huge issue. I mean, if you cannot keep, like, young players like Siraj and Gill cannot be dropping so many catches like they did in the, I just hope it's a one-off, like that happened in that first three one
days. Yeah. I remember, this used to happen quite often, right? I mean, in the older days when, you know, people would just sometimes freeze, people like Harbhajan, right? I mean, if the ball came to them in the initial part of his career, at least, you know, I mean, he, and I'll not, you know, mince my words, he was an embarrassment. Okay, at that point in time, I mean, you actually, Ganguly had a tough time hiding him in the field, right? But things did improve, I mean, after that. And, you know, if I look at the way, you know, these guys have gone through the system, it's not expected of them to, you know, sort of drop those catches. And those are sitters. I mean, if you look at close fielding, or if you look at, outfielding, you should not drop catches. If you do that, I mean, fine. Sometimes, you know, things will go your way, but 9 times out of 10, teams like England, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, they will not give you a second chance.
There's no way. Yeah. So that's a worry. Like, as far as, because I didn't watch the ODI matches in completely, but I watched all the highlights, and it was appalling to see some of the sitters that were being dropped. And in World Cup, like you said, you cannot afford, it can easily win and cost you the World Cup. So it's happened before. To other teams, and it could so easily happen on a home World Cup with pressure, with the crowd support. It could they have to be at their best.
So let's make a crazy prediction. Who's going to win the World Cup?
Right now?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, 7 months out. So they said the final is on 5th of November, right? So 6-7 months to go. So maybe I want to. Okay, what's the harm in saying India? India will win. I want India to win, so I'll say India. Yeah, that's what my heart says. So,
okay.
And then history says the last three World Cups have been won by the home team. So, yeah, there you go.
So much for history and heart. But, you know, I think, you know, England probably would retain their title, looking at the way their, you know, team is set, right? I mean, I don't see any other settled side amongst the top four, top five teams at this point.
England start favourites. There's no question of it. And outright favourites,
Unless, I mean, they just, you know, sort of give everything up, which they won't, because, you know, Stokes and, you know, Bairstow and, you know, even Root, for that matter, right? I mean, they would want to, you know, perhaps continue.
Yeah, Stokes is retired, right? So he'll not play.
Yeah, sorry. Stokes will not. Yeah, my apologies. Yeah.
But of course, they are. I mean, I have a feeling that the same thing will happen. India, England will reach the semis, maybe along with Australia and, I mean, I guess it will be the same four teams with an outside chance, so either of New Zealand or Pakistan. I think one of them will come through. I get the feeling that it's going to be a shoot-off. Like, maybe England will probably lose if they have a bad day. I mean, otherwise, they are outright favourites to win, and I hope their bad day comes against India.
Yeah, and I would also like to see one of the, you know, less favourite teams, somebody like in Afghanistan, because, you know, they have done brilliantly, I mean, yesterday, I mean, as we are recording this. And, you know, T20, yes, I agree, it was a T20 match, but still, you know, quite a
Pakistan team.
But then, you know, Pakistan had new openers, right? I mean, and most of the players, maybe they had a PSL hangover or whatever. So, you know, again, it goes to show that, you know, if you have a high-profile domestic league, which has been, you know, running for quite some time, then, you know, mental fatigue perhaps catches up as well, you know. But I'll take nothing away from Afghanistan. They did very well. Look at the way, you know, Nabi sort of, you know, stood up and, you know, counted. I mean, I would like to see something of this sort, you know, done in the World Cups as well.
Yeah, The problem for Afghanistan, I always get the feeling, is that they're not consistent enough. They might pull it off in a couple of matches in the World Cup, but then there'll be other matches where they get completely thrashed. And that is the problem. I think their bowling is also a lot matchup dependent. So they go well against teams which are not that great against spin, but maybe not, and were also a bit conservative in their approach, which is why they seem to do better against India and Pakistan more often than not. But if you see a team like England, which is very aggressive, and they have no answers. I mean, they end up conceding too many runs, and of course, the batting has always been a weak point. So it would be interesting to see. Definitely, it would be nice if one of these unfancy teams come through and at least reach the semi-finals, and then it'll be fun, like definitely. Yeah. And in this particular World Cup format, they need to because there can be no upsets. I mean, one upset cannot knock you out of the tournament. Same way, one upset cannot take you far as well. So if that team does reach the semi-final, then they would be in really good form. Be it Afghanistan, be it Sri Lanka, or even South Africa. Though I hate to say this about South Africa, but none of them look anywhere close at the moment. So you asked me for my prediction. I said India, you said England. But who do you think are the other favorites in the World Cup from now?
So again, I mean, I would not write off New Zealand. They are coming together very well, and good batting unit. The bowling is splendid, and you know, they thrive in all conditions. So New Zealand definitely. And let's take a wild bet and say Bangladesh. I mean, amongst top four because of the, you know, subcontinental conditions, you know. So I think Bangladesh is going to do well.
Well, their fans would certainly hope so. It'll be interesting. I mean, it's about time they do well, right? I think the 2015 World Cup in Australia, where the conditions favored them a bit, they did a pretty good job. So you're right. Maybe if given the right set of conditions, maybe if the ball turns a bit, they could be a handful. I mean, I think they need a bit of luck going their way. But I think if they might be a very handy proposition if they could get to bowl first in day-night matches. Mm-hmm. I think they have got the batting to chase it down. And talking about the World Cup, one last point of the World Cup before we move on. I saw that the BCCI or the ICC has finally has done everyone a favor by at least giving us the starting and end dates of the World Cup. I think it's been very poor organization by, I don't know whether who's in charge of this, whether it's the ICC, whether it's the BCCI, but it's just, they are just selling the fans short. I mean, I don't understand why they cannot release the World Cup schedule well in advance so that people can actually make travel plans. And it's a World Cup. I mean, it's not only Indians who are living abroad, but there's so many fans who will travel from other countries as well to travel to watch the World Cup. I just don't get the logic behind this at all. Why can't they just release the schedule?
Perhaps, you know, I mean, this is also to do with the fact that, you know, one-day cricket is not that lucrative anymore, and they maybe, you know, wanted to die a natural death. So, don't know. I mean, a lot of things could be said, but I mean, I expect the richest board to do better.
Absolutely. Be it in-stadium experiences. I mean, there has been a lot of complaints about that during the recent, on Twitter, during the recent India-Australia test series as well, or be it scheduling the entire Dharamshala fiasco that happened where a lot of people lost the money. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it calls for a certain lack of don't care attitude about the fans. I mean, so that is very sad to see because it's the fans and the players who make the sport what it is, not the administration. But it's a lesson that's never been learned. So.
And I thought we were doing pretty well. Yeah. But, you know, because I went to the first test match at Pune, I mean, that stadium. So India versus Australia 2017, January 2017. Yeah. So, I mean, the facilities were always top-notch. But, I mean, reading about things now, it seems that we have taken some regressive steps, you know, in terms of the whole experience.
It's very sad. I hope the organizing committee, of course, I'm not saying it's BCCI's fault, but whoever's in charge, be it the BCCI, be it the ICC, for the World Cup, I hope they get their act together. There's still time for them to release the schedule as soon as possible and, you know, make it easy for fans all over the world to come and enjoy not only the spectacle, but also the country. It's a good time to visit India. It's a great time the weather is nice all over the country. So, I mean, what better opportunity to showcase the country in a good light. Okay, yeah. So moving on, let's go to the next segment. We'll now we'll have some special mentions about so much of the stuff that's going on around the cricket world. So a very exciting test cricket matches have now happened recently in New Zealand. Two great test matches in recent times. One was, of course, New Zealand overcame a follow-on to defeat England by one run. And then a couple of weeks later, a brilliant Kenny Williamson 100 ensured that New Zealand win on the last ball on the fifth day of a test match against Sri Lanka, in the process ensuring India qualified to the World Test Championship final, knocking Sri Lanka out.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we talk a lot about pitches and test matches not going for 5 days. I think New Zealand have found a way to make it work.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at the way their team is taking test cricket seriously, I mean, you got to stand up and applaud. I mean, single-handedly, I mean, on one hand, I mean, look at that. You have a match like the match you had in Ahmedabad, which was an absolute snooze fest. I mean,
absolutely.
You just, you know, couldn't bear to watch it. And on the other hand, you have somebody like, you know, Williamson delivering on that, you know, Jay's fourth innings, you know, batting with the tail, and the way, you know, Wagner or Henry, right?
I mean, both of them were injured. Both of them came out.
And it reminded me of, you know, the things you keep on hearing, right? All those legends where, you know, people had their arms in cast and they, you know, came out to bat with a single hand, and, you know, Anil Kumble's jaw and all those stories, right? I mean, those are the things you remember. And they've done very well. I mean, they've done very well. Great advertisement for the game. And I think they have taken a fancy to England. That's what I feel, because earlier it was, you know, they used to get really worked up, you know, playing Australia, but now it's England that really, really want to defeat because of that, you know, World Cup final. But
yeah,
it's going to be, you know, quite interesting.
Williamson, I think it also helps that the English coach and the captain are both from New Zealand.
Maybe, but then there have been a lot of interesting players featured in the teams recently, right? Gary Balance is playing for Zimbabwe, and then you have another one in New Zealand. I forget. I mean, he is from South Africa.
Devon Conway.
Conway's from South Africa. Yeah. So
even Wagner is from South Africa, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. It only goes to show how many great cricketers South Africa have missed. If you start from Kevin Peterson to Wagner. I mean, I really enjoyed that the test match against Sri Lanka, because I like you said, the snooze fest at Ahmedabad. I think it was happening on the same time, and I could not bear to watch that final day in Ahmedabad. Because I think when I started watching the New Zealand Sri Lanka, the last session was going on.
Yeah,
and New Zealand still had a way to go. I think they needed around 100, and they had 5 wickets. They still had, but Williamson was batting, and it was an exceptional innings by Kane Williamson, I felt, and he's really grown. I mean, he too had. I mean, I like when I see Root, when I see Williamson, I get a lot of belief that Virat Kohli too will make a comeback, because there was a time when Joe Root, I think, went for 3 years without 100, and then you had the Joe Root year last year or the year before that, and then. Kane Williamson too, I think after the World Test Championship final, he went on a run where he didn't score a single 15 test cricket for 2 years. And now he has scored, what, 300s in the last three test matches. I think he scored a double. He scored 100 in that follow-on test match against England.
Yeah.
He scored 100 against Sri Lanka, and now he scored a double again in the second test match where New Zealand absolutely thrashed Sri Lanka. So seeing all that, and now that Kohli has scored 100, albeit on a snooze fest in Ahmedabad, hopefully, this is the second coming of Virat Kohli. I mean, he's been in good form. Even in ODIs, leading up to the test matches, I think he scored 100 in the T20 against Hong Kong last year. So, and that innings against Pakistan, of course. So, maybe it is the second coming of Virat Kohli, and we are seeing. And hopefully, maybe the World Test Championship will be a good time for him to score another spectacular 100 in England.
I think he should. It's long due. And, you know, a player of his stature, he should stand up and, you know, just make himself, counted. If he doesn't do that at such a stage, then it will be a shame, to be fair.
Absolutely. And talking about lost hundreds, we have to get in Tenda Bauma over here. Absolutely. I mean, I watched the highlights. Spectacular innings, because I must say that Tenda Bauma has... Okay, so for some context, this is just his second century in 7 years.
Yeah.
This is second test century, second century in 7 years. And it came at the time when the match was very, very evenly poised, because I think South Africa scored 320, South Africa and West Indies all out for 250, and they were 8 for 2 when he came to bat.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the way the West Indies batted in the final innings, maybe 150 would not have been, 150 would have been more than enough to get them out. But you didn't know that at the time when Bauma came to bat, and it was absolutely spectacular. I saw the highlights. I mean, he's a very stylish batsman, very exquisite. All the cuts, pulls, the drives, and the slog sweeps against spinners. Very, very elegant to watch. A bit like Rohit Sharma. Very elegant to watch. And mm-hmm. I was seeing his career average. Even now, after playing 56 test matches, it's just 35. But he gets a lot of these 40s, 50s, 60s. So I was very happy for that. He ended up getting 100 and he scored 172. The next highest score was 42. South Africa were 100 for 4 at one time. So he guided them 320. I think when he got out, he got out for 172 and South Africa's score was 293. So that shows yep. his contribution. Counter-attacking innings. And he's the captain of a team which is in complete doldrums. It was really good to see him play such an innings, such a fine attacking innings. And maybe this will spur South Africa on to do better things in Test cricket. Did you get a chance to see that innings?
No, I did not. I just, you know, read it on Cricinfo. But, you know, I think he's done pretty well. And it's always good to see, you know, sort of a redemption innings, if I call it that. You know, if you wait 7 years for another test century, I mean, well done. I mean, he's not young, not that young anymore, but yeah. He's done pretty well. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm happy for him. And I hope that, of course, it doesn't help that in the next World Test Championship cycles, South Africa just plays some 25 test matches. Not even in the cycle, sorry. In the next FTP for 5 years, South Africa played 25 test matches. So he's not going to get too many centuries. I'm happy that he's got the second one. You had his first one. Mm-hmm. And one last thing about that test match was that you also saw the batting of Shivnarayan Chandrapal's son, Taj yep. Naren Chandrapal. And
yeah.
it's a really similar how it's uncanny how really similar his batting stance is to his father.
Yeah
you see where the coaching has come from.
I agree, absolutely. And I think they played a first class match together as well. You know, I was reading about this a couple of years back when he started playing, and at that time I said, okay, I mean, what if they could play a test match together? Because Chandrapal was still the senior. He was still playing the test match. He was still in the squad. But then, sadly, that did not happen.
That would have been the first.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever happened, right? Not even in the late 1890s or 90, early 1900s when, there were players who used to play into the 50s. I don't think even then the father and son combination has ever played.
Not sure.
Maybe they played first. Yeah.
First-class cricket, yes, because, you know, you had those 30, 40 years people playing first-class cricket, right? I mean, at that point in time. But then I don't think at test level that has happened.
And one last point in the segment is that we spoke about how chaotic the World Cup venues have been, not yet been announced. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's have a look at the Asia Cup venues. So after all the standoff between the BCCI and PCB, because India will not play Pakistan in Pakistan, mm-hmm. So there was there has been a lot of to and fro since, I think, last August, since Ramesh Zada made a threat that if India don't come to Pakistan, then Pakistan would not come to India to play the World Cup. And then I think, of course, a lot of posturing has gone on from both sides. And then finally, after a series of meeting at the Asian Cricket Council, right now what has been decided is that the tournaments will be held in two venues. So which is fine. I mean, Pakistan is the host and they should have games in their home crowd deserves to see their team in action. So they're going to have all the Pakistan matches and all the other matches as well in Pakistan, and all the Indian matches are now going to be held at a second venue. And what really, well, sensibly, what would we think? That we would think that it would be either in one of the UAE, because yeah. UAE has hosted, or and it's close by just for the logistic point of view. Or even Sri Lanka said that they could even host it, which also makes sense, which is fair enough. It's a 2-hour flight. But I saw a report where it was written that the venue could also be England. And I just don't get the logic. I don't get the logic of this. Like, are you telling me that they'd be flying 6-7 hours just to play one match and then come back to Pakistan and play another match?
But a tournament is called Asia Cup, right?
Yeah.
So it should be in Asia. You can't find some place, right, to play cricket at all.
And it doesn't make any sense logistically, like for the tournament. I mean, I just don't get what the rationale behind this. I mean, I hope it doesn't come to that they're going to have all the Indian matches in England. It makes no sense whatsoever. The tournament will be a fiasco because you can't expect teams who are based in Pakistan to just fly out to England in a different time zone, fly out 7-8 hours, and then play India over there.
Yeah,
in a tournament. I mean, it makes no sense to me.
Have they finalized on that? Or
no, they have not. It's just been written in a report that, and England ECB has said that they're interested because, of course, they say that India and Pakistan, a lot of fans over here, a lot of Asian fans, Sri Lanka for Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Afghanistan. So they will have full gate receipts. But I mean, I'm sure you'll be happy if they play in England. But
I don't think they should do that, to be honest. I mean, it's really, you know, it's not healthy.
Yeah, it's not healthy. I mean, it's going to be right before the World Cup, so it makes more sense to have it in one of the Asian countries. All teams get good practice, and the format is the same as the T20. Of course, they're going to play it in the 50-over format this time, but the format is the same as last time. So the groups have been fixed in such a way that India and Pakistan play twice, at least, each other. So make the most of it. And then if they reach the final, which last time India didn't, if they reach the final, then they play each other three times. And then, of course, they'll play in the World Cup. So, yeah, I think that's become an annual thing now. Play each other 3 or 4 times before the, including a World Cup. I mean, it'll be good fun. And I hope, there's still time for it, so we can discuss about it later. But I just thought the choice of the venues were interesting. Like, I just thought, come on, don't go to England. I mean, come on. I mean, you cannot have an Asia Cup in England. And defeats the entire purpose, right? We can move to the next, our next segment, which is about... So here we will talk about, say, some of our memories of some memorable cricket matches when we were young. So in both our case, that would probably be sometime in the 90s. So Mehul, why don't you start off? I think you have a very interesting match for us.
Okay. So this is the first match I, you know, very vividly remember because this is, you know, in the days of Doordarshan or DD. I mean, when it was the only channel available to us. This was December 1991. And India had traveled to Australia. And on 6th of December 1991, they played West Indies in the Benson and Hedges, it was called World Series, I think, at that time. But there were only three teams, but for whatever reason it was. And, you know, at Perth, at Wagha, at the original Perth wicket, where, you know, the ball used to fly and it was a bowler's paradise and all that. So, you know, India batted first. And obviously, West Indies had Ambrose, they had, you know, Cummins, and, you know, I think Marshall as well, if I remember correctly. And India got bundled out for 126. Shastri opened the innings and he made, I think, some 25 or 30 odd and over 100 balls. That's what I sort of remember.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a bowler's wicket, right? I mean, early Australian, summer, if I could call it that, you know, December 6th. And, lot in the wicket and a lot of swing, in the air as well. If you look at the highlights now, you can definitely see that. And, West Indies started well. But, what happened is, I mean, we had, and this is where it gets interesting. You had, four bowlers, you had four pacers. India had four pacers in the lineup that day. Okay. And I'll talk about the fifth one a little later. So you had a couple, they were opening the bowling, and then you had Manoj Prabhakar. Then you had this guy, Subrata Banerjee, and then, Javagal Srinath. And if I look at the scorecard now, right, and the bowling innings for India was just 41 overs, right? And the top four bowlers had all used their quota of, 10 overs by then, which is, by modern standards, it's a little strange because, that's not how usually, it happens these days. So, and the 41st over was, delivered by none other than our, sort of a quasi seamer, if I'm call him that, Sachin Tendulkar. He bowled seam up that day, just one over. Okay, so I think West Indies were 80 for 9 or something. They went, you know, Ambrose of all people, and you know, Cummins, Anderson Cummins, the bowler, not Pat Cummins, and Anderson Cummins. They stitched sort of a partnership together, and then, you know, I think Ambrose got run out, and you had, I don't remember who was the number 11.
Patrick Patterson.
Okay, well, maybe. I don't remember that, but yeah. So they were 5 runs short. So they were 121 for 9. And, you know, Azhar just tosses the ball to Tendulkar and says, you know, why don't you have a go? And Tendulkar runs in and, you know, obviously, I think it gets a couple, then, you know, all of that. So 5 runs have been already scored in 5 deliveries, and score, you know, stands level. And last ball of the 41st over, Tendulkar, you know, just, you know, puts it outside off stump, and it was an outswinger, which, you know, I think, who was the guy? Anderson Cummins again, right? He tries to slash hard at it, and Azhar takes a brilliant catch in the slips to, you know, just tie the match. So that is one of my first memories, you know, looking at the match. And if you look at it, Subrata Banerjee that day got 3 wickets, and you haven't heard of that guy probably after that tour of you know, Australia and the World Cup, because he was dropped and all of those things. Srinath bowled quite well. I mean, if you see the way he got his wickets, I mean, beautiful bowling. I mean, a precursor of things to come, whatever he has done for India in the 90s and early 2000s, you could actually see, you know, the start of that. And yeah, Azhar's catch. So, I mean, it was a very interesting match, because the first time in my life I, you know, became aware of the fact that there's also a tied match, right? So, and I think it was the second or third test, third tied match in the history of ODIs at that point in time. So, a very good match, I would say. India didn't do that great in that tour. They did reach the finals of the Tri-Series, but they were, you know, sort of completely blanked in test matches. And after that, the World Cup was not that great as well. But if you look at that tour, I mean, I think they were in Australia for a better part of 4 months. And they got really acclimatized. And coming back to my point, you know, going before the World Cup to the same country. So the preparation, the intention was in place. I mean, you landed there, you're playing one day cricket, you're playing test cricket, you're getting acclimatized to all of that. Although it didn't turn out that well, but then at least, you know, the intent, I respect that. You know, that tour was a really, really interesting one.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, it was a very good match, very, very good match. And I think, you know, if you look at, you know, Azhar's tradition of tossing the ball to Tendulkar, right, last overs, after that, he did it a number of times. And Tendulkar actually got some confidence as bowling as well. I don't recall Tendulkar bowling seam up, you know, in, you know, any other match after this. But then on that day and that track, I mean, he actually, you know, and, you know, if you recall, right, I mean, there's this funny story when he went to MRF Pace Academy when Dennis Lilly was there, and he wanted to be a fast bowler. And Dennis Lilly said, no, you know, do something else, or, you know, something to that effect, right? So Tendulkar actually was living his dream, right? I mean, bowling seam up at Wacha that day.
And absolutely, it was like, it was like telling Dennis Lilly, you don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, and he got a wicket.
He got the wicket, which like tied the match. I mean, it's incredible. Right?
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, there are, I mean, I can imagine, you know, what must be going through his mind. You're bowling at Wacha seam up, and you know, there you go.
And so, an interesting thing about Tendulkar is that I think you said that he maybe has not bowled seam up after that. I remember him bowling at least twice, and funnily enough, both were in the last overs.
Okay.
So there was this match, I think, maybe a couple of years later. I mean, I was too young. I have not watched those matches live. But on a related note, I'm just saying, in 1993, the famous Hero Cup. So I think it was the match before the finals. And in that, it was a must-win game, or to the semifinals. I don't remember the format. Against South Africa. South Africa needed 6 to win of the last over.
Yeah.
Bran McMillan was batting with someone. I don't know who. And Tendulkar was given the last over by Azharuddin again. And he gave 3 runs. So he had 1 over 0, made in 0 for 3.
Yeah.
So he bowled seam up there.
Right. I didn't see it. Yeah. The only reason I didn't see it, because, you know, DD, right, used to cut off at 8:30 for news at that time.
Oh, right?
So I was listening out to it on the radio, so I couldn't see him, you know, bowling seam up. So, wow. So I don't know whether he, you know, did that, but I remember hearing it.
Yeah. So, and then 3 years later, this one I saw. This was in 1996, the famous Titan Cup. That was held in India. It was a Titan Cup between India, Australia, and South Africa tri-series,
yeah,
where each of them played 3 matches each against each other. So South Africa had already reached the final, and this was the last match in the league stage between India and Australia, whoever would win.
In Mohali.
So it was a virtual semi-finals, would qualify. Yeah. And then I think India scored some 289, which was a huge score, I mean, by then. And 289, and then again, Azhar ran through all his bowlers, and then finally, he had 1 over remaining, and Australia needed 6 to win a 1 over with Brad Hogg and McGrath batting. And who does he give the ball to? He gives the ball to Tendulkar.
Quite a recurring theme, right? I mean, during those days.
And the best part was that in that Tendulkar didn't get a wicket. So they needed 6 runs to win, and they got run out of the first ball.
Yeah, and
they qualified. So your story is very interesting, because when you come to think of it, Tendulkar, you always associate Tendulkar with bowling spin, right? Because from 98 or 99 onwards, I think 98, he got those 5 wickets against Australia. Yeah. Where he bowled leg spin, off spin, the straight up. And he bowled everything that was there in that match. And he got 5 wickets in that ODI match in Kochi.
Yeah.
And before that, he has actually only bowled seam ups. So it was something happened in those 2 years where he decided to maybe switch to spin. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I think maybe he got obsessed or something, you know. I mean,
And he could spin the ball. Oh my God, he could really spin. He had no control, but he could really let it rip. And he, I think he could bowl a couple of googlies. He could bowl a leg spin. He could bowl an off spin. He could bowl the straighter one. And I think he has 2 5-wickets all in ODI cricket, both at Kochi. And,
I'm not very sure, but
One against Pakistan as well on a losing course, where Inzamam scored 100 to win the match. And then there was this, of course, the famous 2001 Test match against Australia, where Lakshman and Ravid batted the whole day. And so in that final innings, where I think Australia were having this really irritating partnership where they were refusing to get out, and Hayden and I think Vaughan were batting. No, not Vaughan. I think I don't remember who was batting with Hayden. But then there's this clip where Tendulkar, and I heard it somewhere as well later on, that Tendulkar kept telling Ganguly, give me 1 over, give me 1 over. And there was some 25 overs left, okay, for the end of the test match. And Ganguly was like, no, I'm not going to waste an over with you. And I have Harbhajan, I have Venkatapathy Raju, and I have all these spinners. I'm not going to give you an over and waste it. And then finally, I think when the partnership was not getting broken, if you see YouTube, even now you will see Ganguly showing his finger and saying 1 over, just as it 1 over. And so Tendulkar very gloomily takes the ball, and he ends up getting Hayden out, or he ends up getting one of them out. I think it was Hayden out. And the moment he gets Hayden out, he gets another over.
He got Hayden out. He got Gilchrist out.
Yes.
And there was one more.
He got one out. And he.
Yeah.
And that's what he broke the back. He bowled for 4 or 5 overs. He got 3 wickets, and that helped us. That helped India win. I mean, incredible. Like so, from bowling seam ups and getting Patrick Anderson out. What's his name? Patrick Cummins, right?
Yeah, Anderson Cummins.
Anderson Cummins out. I completely mixed up the names there. Anderson Cummins out at Wakha, being a fast bowler, to his heroics in a dust bowl on a fifth day Eden Gardens wicket in the last session against one of the greatest teams to have played test cricket. So that is Sachin Tendulkar for you. And he could bat a bit, right?
Yeah,
so.
Of course. He could.
Interesting. I think this is a very nice segment. I think, my memories were, I just associated it with your Tendulkar memories, and I added a few more. So I think we could leave it at that at this segment for this week. We'll have more next week in the segment. I think it's
absolutely
a very nice addition. Yeah. So do you want to add anything more, Mehul, on umpiring or anything? Do you have any trivia, or do you think we should call it a wrap?
I think we should call it a wrap, just about the hour mark. And you'll have to do a good job editing this, I guess. Right?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Always learning. Okay, so great at chatting with you as always, Mehul. It was good to, you know, like we have tried to insert whatever we could about so much of cricket that's happened in the last 1 month. And Yeah, any final words, Mehul?
No, all good. And I'm really looking forward to the season. I have, on a personal note, I've started training a bit and, trying to get my fitness up. I have got my kit together. I did send you a picture the other day.
Yes.
So, all of it is coming well, but let's see, fingers crossed. I mean, the weather should hold good. I mean, at least in the early part of the season. And maybe they play me in the 11. Fingers crossed, if they select me, they just, discard me, then it's a different story. I'll have
When
to
does the
really.
season begin?
Well, 6th of May or the 5th of May, when the first Sunday is my game.
Okay. So it starts
So,
there, and then every Sunday you have a game, is it?
yeah.
That's how it works. And you guys play home and away? Is it something of that
Yeah,
sort?
it is home and away. So 1 week you are at home, ground, and the other ground, other week you are away. So, and you have a sort of a league. I think there are 10 teams, I guess, 10 to 12 teams. And what happens is some of the fixtures do get cancelled as well because, and there are no replacements or for that, right? I mean, you just plow on. So that's how it goes.
Absolutely. So with that, it's a wrap on this episode of the Cricket Enthusiast Podcast. It was, as always, great fun talking cricket with Mehul. If
Likewise.
you enjoy listening to the episode, please share it with your friends, family, and on your social media and help spread the word. It helps us.
Right, thank you. Thanks so much. And hope to see you soon.
Cricket Enthusiast is a podcast which is hosted by Kaushik Lakshman and Mehul Jain. The podcast is created, produced, and edited by me, Kaushik Lakshman.